This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
The podcast that is supposed to be about baseball, but unfortunately there is no baseball, so we have made other plans. Today we are continuing the Why I'm a Mariners Fan series. I'm very excited to have not one but two guests who are also Hollywood producers who promised to put me in the movies. That all happened just before we started recording, so none of you heard it, but they did promise to make me a big star, so that will be coming later. Keep your eyes on whatever movies look like now, I guess. That's kind of a weird hypothetical also. But my guests today are Aditya Sood and Christopher Miller, who are known for their work on movies like The Martian, Deadpool, Let's Be Cops, the Lego Movie, Spider-Man, 22 Jump Street, and are lifelong friends and Mariner fans above all else. Fellas, how are we doing?
We're doing great, considering. Really good. Living that bunker life.
Yeah, I was gonna ask what your situation is. I mean, I'm sure you guys are, what does Hollywood look like right now? Is everything kind of stopped? Like, what's going on in the movie industry with, no one being able to be near each other?
Surprisingly busy, considering that nothing is actually in production. We're finishing producing an animated film where people are animating from their homes. A movie called Connected that maybe will come out in September if people are seeing movies then. And writing a Spider-Verse sequel and writing on a TV show and a bunch of other things. So there's a lot of writing work happening right now.
I see. I feel like the quarantine is doing that thing where it's like, you have all this time, what are you going to do with it? And for some people, that's like, I'm going to dive into my work. And for others, it's like kind of paralyzing. So I know it's like very, for creatives, I feel like it's a very interesting time where you are really confronted with the idea of like, how much you really want to do the work. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Both of us have kids as well. So that ends up taking a surprisingly large amount of time.
I have heard that about kids.
I think we're also both realizing that there are going to be about 27 different film and TV projects about quarantine comedies, romantic comedies, thrillers, horror, that we're all going to have to read after all this and relive every painful moment.
Yeah, I feel like for me at least, I don't know if I want to be reliving all of this, I kind of want to flush it and try to get back to just normal content, but if people are going to make the quarantine movies, I guess we can't stop them.
Well, we will try to stop them. That's been my goal anyway. Whatever I can do for my part, doing my part for America.
So, we're obviously here to talk about the Mariners and sort of how we all got into the Mariners originally and how it's kind of progressed over the years. But I'm curious, I assume with your guys' profession that your jobs have taken you out of Seattle. So I was curious, if that is true, I'm assuming, how long have you been outside of the Pacific Northwest?
Well, we graduated high school in 93, and I came straight to Southern California to go to college down here, and stuck around because it turns out if you want to work in Hollywood, you got to live kind of near Hollywood.
True that. And I went back east for college and then moved to LA upon graduation. So I've been out in LA for 23 years, and I left. Yeah, we both left Seattle in 1993. Back in the heyday, finally broken 500. The Mariners had
Kingdom
Griffey.
Yeah, I've heard of them. What a time to leave! Like, wow, you really get out right before everything really starts to pop off, huh? Like, are you, and back then too, you don't even really get to watch them on TV very much if you're outside the Northwest.
Well, so I mean, 95, those playoffs in 95, well, I was watching from the East Coast and like, you know, on a TV, and it was on at like 1 a.m. And, you know, and I was losing my mind, and because of the East Coast, everybody there was like Yankee fans and whatever. So for me, I was like the only Mariner fan that I could find out in the wilderness, but and you had to stay up extra late and really care about it. So it was hard to find.
And actually, I would say in 95, before that, because it was that incredible comeback against the then California Angels, and one of my really good friends had grown up in Southern California and was a diehard Angels fan. He grew up in Orange County. And I just remember going to just like every day in August when the Mariners just kept winning and winning and winning. And I would just cut out the LA Times sports section write-ups of the games and just like leave them at his door, which you would have thought would have completely jinxed the Mariners. And then it looked like it almost did. And then they won, I forget, it was like they won the second to last, or they lost the second to last game. And then they won the last game and then had the one game playoff. And I remember watching that also in, you know, pretty unfriendly situation with a lot of Angels fans down there, and it was very sweet to see Randy Johnson beat former Mariner Mark Langston in that game.
Yeah, it's really like that was the only way I feel like it could have happened for the Mariners. Like they had to like not only have the most batshit insane season of all time, but then also in the one game playoff, it's like, hey, remember that guy that you all loved 4 or 5 years ago? He's the thing standing in the way of you actually making the playoffs. Like that seems so specifically like almost like written, like it was a script for the Mariners. Like you have to beat the final boss, who at one point was like the best pitcher in franchise history,
and traded for Randy Johnson was like the throw-in in that deal, if I recall. Right, there were like three pitchers and some 6'11" freak of nature who turned out just to be the most amazing pitcher that I think I've ever seen in my lifetime.
And then when we were in Southern California, we would go to the Angels games that were against the Mariners, and including we had tickets for the game the Mariners were playing against the Angels on September 11th, 2001, which was Adithya's birthday, and I had arranged for his name to be on the board with a middle name Goms for Go M's. Adithya Goms sued, and that game obviously got canceled, and we had to have a makeup game where we had to make up birthday wishes.
I said, yeah, so they ended up playing the game like 3 weeks later, and we went down to the ballpark, and I remember we were there with a couple of friends, one friend who was actually a classmate of ours who had come down. I think it was like the first trip he had taken after 9/11, and we went, and it was actually the makeup game. I don't, no one will remember this. We'll remember this always. The Mariners were, you know, cruising that season, and all of a sudden, I think it was like in the fifth or sixth inning, Chris and I went down to get some ice cream or something, and Edgar Martinez actually got beamed by a pitch, and out of nowhere charged the mound, and this insane fight broke out. And I mean, just like, we couldn't believe it. And, you know, obviously, like, Edgar was, you know, probably pissed off that he was going to, you know, get injured and miss the playoffs. And, you know, and so it was like a really uncharacteristic moment. And we got back to our seats, and our friends were like, oh my God, did you see that? Like, we can't believe it. That fight, it broke out, and it was crazy. And Edgar, and he got tossed. And he goes, no, 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 your name was on the scoreboard. Did you see that? And we totally missed it. It turns out they just like ran the program they were going to play on 9/11. They just ran it, you know, on October 7th or whatever it was.
Wow, one of the many tragedies of that time.
Very low on the list, but yes.
So I have a little bit of background just from trying to set this up with you guys and talking about, you know, the logistics of this. But you guys are lifelong friends, is that correct? Like, you have known each other since you were kids?
Since we were in second grade. That's true. We met in 1982? Or was it? Yeah, 1982. Yeah.
And what part of the world is this happening in? I'm assuming Washington, but where specifically?
We met at the Evergreen School in North Seattle. I grew up in Lake Stevens, and basically grew up in Bellevue, Issaquah.
Yeah. Well, at that time, actually, I think we were living in Mount Lake Terrace, and then I think we moved to Bellevue right afterwards. But we lived like as far as you conceivably could live and still go to the same school. I mean, we were probably, I want to say, like an hour drive away from each other. It was a long distance phone call, if people remember what that used to be.
Wow.
Yeah, we were only allowed to talk after 5 p.m. because the rates would go down.
Word. Okay, so the Mariners of the 80s obviously are not very exciting. Were you guys like fans from the jump? What do you remember about the Mariners of your childhood, and like when did you realize that you were like fans? Like, I know that everyone kind of has the moment that they remember from childhood, but for so many of us, it's the 90s Mariners where they have really exciting nationally known players. So in the 80s, what was that like? I mean, what player drove you to be a Mariners fan?
I really liked Elvin Davis. I had like a little mini poster of him on my wall. But I think it really was like Edgar and Griffey in like 90, 91. Right when, and I remember the season in 91, listening to all the games on a really crappy radio in my bedroom, and it was the first season they had gone over 500, and it was like winning the World Series. It was the most exciting, and it was pretty late in the season when they got like their 82nd win or whatever it was, and I was so excited, and that's when I realized, oh, I guess I must be a fan if I'm excited about them breaking 500 for the first time in their franchise.
I think I remember that well. I think actually the moment I became a fan was when the Mariners were inexplicably featured in the third act of the Naked Gun movie.
Oh yeah,
and I just couldn't. Because I think I even recognized the Mariners were sort of a joke. So like the idea that they were playing for the World Series was the most implausible thing in that movie, which did co-star O.J. Simpson as a really likable fellow. Alvin Davis, Harold Reynolds, those guys. Reynolds. And I did actually really love Mark Langston. I remember he had a very cool, I think it was his like 87 or 88 Topps baseball card. He was like in the stretch on his pitch. I was like, oh, that seems like badass. And so... He was an early favorite, and you know, I remember going to games. I mean, to be honest, like I really grew up in the 80s. Like my first love was the Sonics, and followed very closely by the Seahawks. And the thing about Seattle is it always felt like there could only be like one really great team at any time. So the Sonics were kind of like on the downswing after winning the championship in 79. The Seahawks made the playoffs for the first time, and I feel like, you know, everyone was just so focused around them until, you know, then they got bad, and then Xavier McDaniel and Dale Ellis showed up, and then those Mariners, I mean, it just like the players were incredible, and you know, I think we were all like huge Edgar fans from you know, back in the third base days, even before he was a DH. It really was, I have to say, for me, I mean, you know, for in just baseball in general, I think it was the mid-90s that really like clicked in.
Like everyone.
Yeah.
Fair weather fan. It was very exciting. No. There's some exciting baseball happening in the mid-90s.
Well, I think it was also, you know, it was interesting because it was like a way to have a connection from like being away from Seattle. You know, because like I said, we went to school in 93, 94 was the strike. So that all, you know, everything kind of got screwed up. And then all of a sudden, I think, you know, we were both in college, you know, and you're surrounded by people who are not from your hometown. And then there was just this point of pride of this like scrappy overachieving team that, you know, defied the odds in every conceivable way. And, you know, all of the stuff about getting the stadium, and you know, it there was like a real point of civic pride. And so it became more than just baseball. I mean, I think it really did feel like, you know, it was a connection to home that it was always fun to go to the games. And back then, when you would go to Angel Stadium, there were more Mariners fans in the audience than in attendance than Angels fans. Until that stupid rally monkey showed up, and then it all went to hell.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I did the same thing. I actually went, I'm from Sammamish originally, and then I went to college in San Diego. So I would, I mean, the Mariners play the Padres every year, but I was more interested in going to see them play the Angels, because that felt like their most, like the rival, you know, like if I wanted to watch the Mariners right. play like as heated as they could be, I was like, I'm going to go watch them play the Angels. So I went to that stadium a couple times when I was in college. And first of all, that stadium is just nothing. Like, it's a very weird yeah. place to watch baseball. You know, I'm not, I think we're also just very sort of jaded by having Safeco Field, but like the stadium that's just surrounded by a parking lot is such a weird vibe for someone who's used to the complete opposite, where it's like in the city. But also there's like no, there's nothing, like there's just a rock pile. Like, that's the defining feature, you know, like there's nothing about that stadium that's memorable.
So yeah, and it's like there, a Disneyland rock pile where it's like mm-hmm. fake, like made like foam rocks that are not even real. It's the whole thing is just kind of.
So I think you guys, you didn't have the joy of going to Angel Stadium before it was redone, when it was, I think the Rams used to play there, right? Like it was just. It was a terrible place to play baseball. And so I think like the Disney facelift was an improvement, but yeah, it's no Safeco Field.
Yeah. Well, and also like, I think the funniest part about the Angels in general is like, I mean, there's a lot of funny things about the Angels, but like when they won the World Series, like people are not going to remember any of the details. Like, I mean, obviously now we're like 18 years removed from it or whatever, but like everyone just remembers the rally monkey and those fucking the red sticks that their fans banged together. Like it was very like, it seemed very like we're introducing an entire region to baseball, because I mean you guys know this, but like Anaheim and LA are two different places. Like Anaheim is Orange County, LA is LA. So it feels like when you like, when that World Series was happening, it was like, okay, this is Orange County learning in real time what it's like to have a good sports team.
What baseball like, is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I like mean, we'll that, give them this cute little mascot and these sticks to bang together and good things.
Was that the period when they were called the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim? There was like 2 years where it was called that really awkward name, and yeah. it was sort of like, look, we're LA as well. LA can root for us.
The one thing I'll say about that 2002 team, though, that I will, I'll never admit to this, but I have a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for that team. Was that they played the Yankees in the first round of the playoffs, and I went to a couple of those games, the playoff games, and the Yankees fans were at just peak obnoxiousness. I mean, it was like, I don't think I've been around worse fans in my life than those people. And to watch the Angels beat them and for these guys to have no idea what just happened to them was such delicious schadenfreude that I will never forget. And so
you have a soft spot.
I do have a little bit of a soft spot to that game. Now, I'll admit I was actually rooting for the Giants in that World Series, because I am a Barry Bonds fan. But yeah, that's all I'll say about that.
So then, Fair enough. I guess in the timeline here then of your fandom, we've kind of talked about childhood, and then you get into the mid-90s where like even people outside of Seattle are starting to notice the Mariners. But then mm-hmm. if you fast forward a little bit, we have, I mean, Ichiro shows up.
Yes.
We have the 116 win season where
yes.
even people who are kind of detached from the Mariners realize something very special is happening. So where are y'all in life when that's happening? What's going on as you're watching the Mariners from afar become the best team in American League history?
We were both in LA, both early in our entertainment careers. I was just starting to work on a TV show called Clone High that was on MTV a billion years ago, I guess it was 2000, came on in 2002. And it was very, very exciting. I definitely fell in love with Ichiro immediately. And I mean, the whole team was awesome. I loved old Jamie Moyer and even the Brett Boone bat flip, all that stuff. I was in. Full
yeah,
in.
Yeah. And you remember that? I mean, that was like, we'd lost Randy Johnson in 99. We'd lost Griffey right before 2000.
Right. We had A-Rod then,
and we
right?
just, no, no. And we lost just A-Rod, lost A-Rod. Right. Remember, he signed for $250 million right. bucks to go to play for the Rangers. And, you know, everyone's like, well, this team is just, nothing's going to happen for them. And yeah, they signed this Japanese guy and like, what's that going to be about? And Brett Boone came back. That was the big free agent signing. And yeah. And that team just like, I don't think there'll ever be a more special experience. I mean, maybe with the exception of the, you know, of the 2013, I know we're not here to talk about football, but the 2013 Seahawks. It was just, it was amazing. And I remember going to those games. Weirdly, I actually ended up at, I probably went to 10 games that season, you know, a bunch in LA and then a few in Seattle. And actually, I think they played the Dodgers interleague. And I remember you would go to those games in Seattle and it was like what I imagine like a religious revival, you know, is. It's like there was something in the air that was so electric when that team was playing, and especially when the team was down, because you always knew they were going to figure out a way to win. I remember we had one of our really close friends, also from elementary school, got married that year, and hopefully she's not listening to this, but Chris and I actually snuck out in the middle of, after the ceremony, but in the middle of the reception, because I think they were, I can't remember if they're playing the White Sox. And it was one of those things where like they were down in the eighth inning, two outs, so what? And you know, they just, Carlos Guillen probably laid down a bunt or something, and yeah, and then they came back. And I remember we came back into the wedding. We avoided our friend seeing us, but we would just retell the story like play by play of what happened, and it was just everybody was on the same wavelength. Like, it was such a powerful time.
And Ichiro is such an unusual player that, you know, like hitting those weird slap singles off of pitches in the dirt, and you know, throwing those ridiculous frozen ropes, you know, from deep right field to third base. He was such like an unusual player that it was like watching something you'd never seen before. So it was great.
Yeah, I feel like I have a similar experience. I mean, I remember, because I think it's easy to forget now, or at least it gets lost to history, that the Mariners of that era were like, they were both very cool in Seattle because they had the new stadium and they had Ichiro. But also it was like literally the first time that Seattle had had outdoor baseball. So you have people who were there just to like sit in the sun, you know, and then they end up watching the greatest team that the American League has ever seen. So it did kind of feel like a party. I mean, a religious experience, whatever you want to call it. Like there were people there who were experiencing something that they never had before. And frankly, I mean, never have since. And like, it's such a specific little time capsule of Seattle. And the other funny part is, like you guys kind of mentioned, like they were very good, obviously, but outside of, I guess, Ichiro, Edgar, and Brett Boone, you didn't really have like massive superstars. Like they weren't like the Astros of right now, where 1 through 7 everyone is hitting 30 home runs. It was like, you know, it'd be eighth inning, two outs, and we're like, oh, Tom Lampkin is up? Yeah, he'll get it done. And like, he wasn't good. Like, but we all just thought that everyone on that team was good by proxy. And like, you look back at it now on paper and you're like, oh, a lot of these guys were just kind of no one. Like David Bell, like he played every day and he was never that great. But for that season, he was exactly what we needed.
Yeah, they were going to solve the problems by trading David Bell for Jeff Cirillo.
Yeah. that was a. We will not speak of that.
The one other thing that I remember, I mean, a lot of things I remember that season, but you know, they finally made the playoffs, and then you know that series with the Indians really was so stressful, and
Bartolo Colon.
Bartolo Colon and CC Sabathia, and you know, it just like it felt like, hey, wait, how could this all fall apart? And of course, you know, we're probably what, 7 years after the Sonics lost to the number 8 Denver Nuggets, right? So we're like, okay, is this just like a Seattle thing? Like, are we gonna all, you know, just have to suffer through this for the rest of our lives? And thank God they came back. But I remember we bought tickets. You could buy tickets for like speculative playoff games online. So, you know, we just assumed that the A's, because the A's were having like an incredible season also, and the A's were playing the Yankees. And so we just assumed that, oh, well, the A's are going to win, so we should just like buy tickets to the A's Mariners game, you know, for whatever it was going to be over the weekend. We bought tickets, and of course that was the famous A's Yankee season series where Derek Jeter has that no look pass to I forget who he got out at the plate, and the A's ended up losing that series, and so those tickets, you know, weren't any good. And I think that was the time I started getting really superstitious about ever, you know,
buying tickets before they existed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's wild to think, because when you brought this up, I just did some quick Googling. The A's that year in 2001 won 102 games. Like, they were a powerhouse. And they had to play in the Wild Card series.
You mentioned winning 102 games
and
they
were
also not even coming close to being first in their division. It's crazy.
When they were also up 2-0 on the Yankees, and then they lose that series. Like, everything that could have gone wrong for them went wrong.
But didn't, like, the Mariners win like 93 games in next year and we're like third in the
in
the West.
They didn't make the playoff. I mean, that was the one, just like if you had said in 2001, Ichiro's rookie season, this is the last time until at least, well, let's be optimistic, at least 2020 that the Mariners are going to make the playoffs. You would have bet so much money against those odds. It's just crazy. And that, yeah, that 02 season was such a heartbreaker, and then 03 was pretty rough, and then the wheels fell off, but at least Ichiro got, like, you know, he beat George Sisler's record the year after that.
But we started making a yearly trip to Phoenix for spring training every year, right around then, I would say, like, 2003, 2004, somewhere around there. We started going every year, and I would say we did that for about 7-8 years. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that sounds right. I think we started in 2002 because, like, we just couldn't wait after the 2001 season to just get more Mariners.
And it was a really nice experience. I don't know if you've done spring training, but, you know, you can like sit out on the lawn and have a picnic and watch a game, and it's like nobody really cares about the outcome. But then you're always like getting swept up in the hype of like, well, maybe, you know, look, this guy, and, you know, maybe if this all comes together, this is going to be their year. It can happen. And year after year, I would get suckered by spring training like hype talk, and I would then get ultimately disappointed. And so then literally last year was the first year, and we stopped going to spring training, you know, after we had kids, but last year was the first year I was like, I'm not going to watch or pay any attention to the Mariners spring training. I'm not going to read a thing about them because I don't want to get my heart broken. And then they started last season, you know, on that win streak, and I was like, nope, not going to believe it. They're terrible. I'm not going to believe it. You can't get me there. And then finally, I think they were like 13-2 or something. I can't remember what it was, but they, in that April, they were awesome, and I was like, okay, fine, all right, I'm gonna believe. And then they suddenly just lost forever after. I was like, I knew it. I should never trust.
Every year I forget
too much.
I was just saying, I think every year I forget if I'm still subscribing to MLB at Bat or not. Because I always start, and then like you stop watching, and then you think you're still paying for it, and then the next year you're like, oh man. I think the killer for me was in 2015. I think they were, you know, I forget what the configuration was, but like everyone, I think Sports Illustrated, people were saying like, this is the year. And I was shooting a movie up in Vancouver, And so, you know, I had MLB at bat, and then you couldn't watch it because it was you know, in a foreign country, and also they blacked out the Seattle broadcast because everyone in Canada just watches the Blue Jays. So I was like really bummed out about that. And then through a very strange set of circumstances, I ended up in Hawaii, where my wife actually gave birth a little unexpectedly. And so I was like, okay, well, at least, you know, I'm going to be stuck here for a bit. I'm going to be able to watch the teams. But turns out Honolulu is considered a home market for the Mariners. So they actually blacked out all of the Mariners games in Honolulu,
too. That makes no sense.
Yeah, so, yeah. So, yeah, it's a tease, man. I want to believe again.
Yeah, Rob Manfred, if you're listening, first, get the season back, and then second, remove the blackout restrictions for the Mariners in Honolulu. These are the number one and two priorities right now for Major League Baseball.
Oh my gosh.
I do think, though, you kind of touched on this idea of, like, the Mariners throughout their history have been pretty good at doing the opposite of what you think they're going to do. You know, like, I think 95 is where, like, people start to really pay attention, but, like, that team is Griffey and, like, a lot of other good players, but even midway through that year, it's like, oh, they're done. Like, people are going to assume that the season is over, the Angels are way ahead, and then, you know, they flip that on its ear. It's like, oh, we're actually going to make the playoffs. And then, you know, like you said, 0-1, they have a clear path to the World Series. That doesn't work out, and then they just stop making the playoffs after that. It's like everything that you would expect the Mariners to do, they're really good at not doing that. Like, you would never expect any team to go 18 years without making the playoffs, especially in baseball, where things are just so random, you know? And it's like, oh, the Mariners found a way to do it.
Well, that was my problem last year, was that I was like, I'm not going to believe it, and then maybe by not believing in them, they'll finally be good. And then they were good, and then I was like, okay, fine, I'll believe. And as soon as I believed, they just flipped the script on me again. Because they have to do the opposite of what you think they're going to do.
I think we have to remake The Naked Gun just so we can, like, put... Maybe that'll start the cycle again.
Start it.
We don't have to. Let's not remake The Naked Gun. I'm kidding. Sorry.
Have y'all seen Little Big League? The Mariners are the villain in that movie.
Oh, they are? I have not seen Little Big League.
Never seen, no, me either.
Really?
Someone did tell me... Someone actually told me that was one of the best baseball movies ever made, and I didn't not believe them. Maybe I should have listened to them.
It is. No, this is all I've wanted. This is my platform to talk about Little Big League. It's a great movie because it was filmed in 1994 during the players' strike, so a couple of the actors in the movie are actual baseball players. So, like, the actual baseball scenes are very good because people who know what they're doing. It's not just actors. But not to spoil the movie, because I think you guys should both watch it. But so the movie is a child, a 14-year-old child who is the grandson of the owner of the Minnesota Twins, inherits the team when his grandpa dies, and then clashes with the manager. So he fires him and makes himself the manager. So it's a 14-year-old, running a big league team. And then the Twins, you know, are in the movie, they're like a sad sack organization, have never won anything, been reeled down on their luck. And then obviously, because it's a sports movie, things turn around, they end up making the playoffs, and they have to play the Mariners. And Ken Griffey is in the movie, like, not an actor, it's Ken Griffey himself. And he is like the final boss of this movie, basically. And he, like, has this scene where he robs a home run, and it, like, looks, it's all very cool. Like, it's a good baseball movie because you can tell they put effort into the baseball scenes. The actual plot is ludicrous, obviously. Like, a 14-year-old would have no idea how to manage a big league team. Like, none of the players would listen to him. But it is a really good movie, and it's funny to watch now, especially when you realize that in 1994 or whenever, like, Griffey was a good person to have in your movie, but that also means that the Seattle Mariners, who had never done anything, have to be the villain. And, like, that part has aged very weirdly because we all know what's happened in the next 25 years of Mariner history.
Boy, it's a real victory to beat the Mariners in the baseball game. What a win. What a win for our team.
I would say, I think the one thing that probably was the most frustrating from, you know, the 10 years after the 2001 season was, because, you know, the whole Moneyball thing was happening at the same time. And, you know, one of the things Chris and I share is a love of baseball, but we also actually really love statistics and math and all this stuff. And so there was, you know, we got really into, you know, looking at, you know, why are the A's winning? Like, it just made us crazy, because it's like the Mariners had all the resources in the world, and you just felt that there were just smarter people running the team in Oakland. And this whole thing that, you know, if you remember, it's like the Mariners seemed like they would say things, you know, off the record or whatever. It's like, we're not really committed to winning. We just want people to have a fun, safe time at the ballpark. And it made us crazy, because we were like, no, we want to win. And like, Seattle's a really smart town. Why are they, you know, why are they managing this team like from the 1950s instead of the 2050s? And you know, and Oakland would just like run circles around us with like a third of the payroll. And I just remember like the Mets were always like the classic example of the team that had like every resource in the world, but they were just so badly run, and you just never wanted to be them. Or I think the Orioles were the other team. And just the Mariners ending up in this like bloated and mediocre to bad place was really disheartening, because it felt like the process was bad on top of everything.
Oh, I just remembered a Mariners memory that has to do with Lookout Landing. How about that? It used to be, I don't know if it was this way always, but it used to be, I used to go on to that website even back when it was like Justin Leone for third. Is that what it was called at one point? But every time it was Felix Day and he was pitching, they would play Sunshine and Lollipops by Leslie Gore. They have a link to the song on the website. My friend Phil and I were making this animated film called Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And we were looking for a song to play over this montage. It was like a feel-good montage. And I was like, well, I know exactly the song that we should put in this montage. It's the song I listen to every 5 days. And it puts me in a good mood, and it's about food. So put it in. And then I feel like I sent an email to Jeff Sullivan, who was running the website at the time.
Yeah.
And he was very excited to know that Lookout Landing had affected an actual motion picture. So there you go. That's a Mariners in Hollywood mini story.
That's awesome. I had no idea, obviously. So that's a great anecdote. And actually is a great segue, too, into what was going to be my next question, which is, I'm sure this has happened, but I want to know sort of the specifics of it. If you guys at any point in your career have had to do the weird explain why you care so much about the Mariners thing, because I'm sure, like, I don't want to say it interferes with work, but like, you know, you're working, or maybe you're at a wedding, like you're doing your life and you're with people who, you know, are not sports fans at all, and you have to explain, oh, actually, sorry, I can't, or like my attention is elsewhere because, you know, the Mariners are 3 games up on a playoff spot and they have, you know, Hisashi Iwakuma on the mound or whatever. Like, has that happened where you've had to sort of give a person who has no idea what you're talking about an explanation on why you're such a Mariners fan?
I don't know if I have that, the direct. I mean, I think in that era, I think it was probably in 01. This was sort of in the early days of TiVo. And actually, I think, you know, I don't think it was widespread, but I remember having a TiVo, and it was like that weird thing where you had to use the little IR thing to, you know, rebroadcast the signal. So it's like every third episode of something you would record, like, wouldn't the cable box wouldn't change or whatever. And so, the Mariners were playing, I think it was one of the playoff games. It was a daytime game, and we decided we were going to go into a media blackout and not know what happened, you know. And you didn't have iPhones back then, so you weren't getting like updates on your phone or whatever. And so we promised that we were just going to like watch the game. I think we were watching it together at like, you know, 7:30 that night, even though the game was in the middle of the day. And I remember I was an executive at Warner Brothers at the time, And I got called into my boss's office for some, I can't remember what movie we were working on at the time, but it was a real emergency. And I walked into the room, and of course, he had the game on television. And I just went, ah, I can't, and I looked like such an idiot. And I literally left his office. And they're like, Sud, what are you doing? I'm like, no. And I had to try to explain what a media blackout was. And then I ended up getting a lecture from him that TiVo, like, as it was, TiVo was going to destroy the media business, and that like it was irresponsible for me to actually have a TiVo. Like I was contributing to my own, misfortune in the future because there weren't gonna be ads on TV shows anymore and blah blah blah. So I got in a lot of trouble over it, but I did maintain the media blackout, and of course I came home and the game didn't record.
Ha. There you
Wow.
go. I mean, I remember having to talk to my boss on some terrible sitcom that I was working on in the mid O's. I'm gonna say 2005, 2006. I was on a string of very bad sitcoms, writing on terrible shows, and I had to convince my boss that I needed to go to spring training with my friend. And so I needed to miss some work, and it was very important, and it was not very well received.
And those aren't even good teams either in 05, 06. Like you don't have the like the excuse of like, yeah, they could, this team could win the
This is
World
the
Series.
year. This is you miss Ichiro's there, Beltre. I liked Adrian Beltre a lot back in the day.
Wait, there was another good. There was another good. And you remember this story? I was working on a movie that it was actually not going very well, and we were supposed to get a to see a new cut of the movie over the weekend. It coincided with Chris and my trip to for spring training, and like we found out about it like on a Friday, and and they were gonna show it to us on Saturday. And I did a thing that you were absolutely not supposed to do, which is I got a copy of the work in progress on videotape, but they couldn't make it till Saturday. And I found a it was a one day career. I mean, it was like I didn't just did not want to cancel this trip to go to spring training. And I got it was a one day career. It was like it was basically the price of a coach round trip ticket from LA to Phoenix. And I mailed the tape. I mean, this really, you were not supposed to do this at all. And I remember Chris and I said, okay, I got to watch this movie. And we got to the hotel. And oh, and the thing that happened before that was when we got to Phoenix, all the cars were sold out. But they're like, hey, guys, you look like two young, eligible bachelors. Maybe we could interest you in this convertible. And we ended up renting this really stupid convertible, and I was gonna and I was getting the movie the next day, and we got to the hotel that we were staying at and realized that there was no VCR that we could watch the movie on, and so we ended up going to a Walmart that was like right next to our hotel. And actually bought an all-in-one TV VCR combo. Do you remember this, Chris? And we bought it, and then realized we couldn't fit it in the convertible. So I think I had to sit in the back and kind of hold it on it on a corner as Chris very gingerly drove us back to the hotel. Ended up getting the movie, watched it. It was terrible, and then ended up returning the VCR combo to the Walmart the next day within 14 days with a receipt, so we got our money back. And
Free
then
TV VCR rental, it turns out.
so yeah, we that our spring training trip was sacrosanct.
Man, that's like such a. I feel like these stories are like very specific to fandoms of not good teams. You know what I mean? Like if you're a Yankees fan or a St. Louis Cardinals fan, I don't feel like you have that urge to like watch or consume everything because there's always the next game or even the next season. And like, oh yeah, they'll be fine. But with the Mariners, it's like you, there's such a fear of missing out on
the one
anything
time.
Because you don't, yeah, you don't know when they're going to ever do this ever again. So I totally get it. I mean, I was
ever for the very first time.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I was in college in 2014 where they were like flirting with the playoffs for the first time since forever. And mm-hmm. like that was tough because I was, and I've told stories like this on past episodes, so sorry to the listeners who have heard this a million times. But it's like, I, you know, college is like, yeah, go out, live your life. And I'm like, oh, I can't, like, you know, the Mariners are playing.
And,
yeah, and it's also like, you know, the thing that we've mentioned where it's like they're not even very good. Like, they had Cano and they had Prime Felix. But other than that, it's like I was, 8 of the 9 hitters are, you know, your Dustin Ackley's, your, yeah. I don't know, Brad Miller, your Logan Morrison. Like, not even very fun baseball to watch, but knowing that they had a slim chance to do it made me just completely captivated. And I was like, I can't, I know this is like the best 4 years of my life, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But if the Mariners make the playoffs, this will be the best 1 year of my life,
guys,
you know, and I can't risk giving that up.
Remember, flags fly forever.
Exactly.
Well, this year they might have a chance just because if we have a very short season, then, you know, a fluke might happen that they can make the playoffs.
I've been saying that.
In a 20-game season. Just
yeah,
saying.
Anything can happen.
I know so little about this team right now. If you asked me to name 5 players, I don't think I could do it. I know Kyle Seager's still there. D. Gordon, who I think is charming. They've got the pitcher Marco Gonzalez.
Yep.
And now I'm running out. There's new guys. There's like the new prospects whose names I forget. I'm literally, Aditya, help me out. I'm trying.
Yeah, I was gonna be like, is Willie Blomquist still on the team? I'm sure he's still on the team.
Mitch Haniger is still there, right? Yeah. He was good once and then isn't good anymore.
Yeah,
he got injured.
He had a testicle injury that kept him out all of last
year. Yes, testicle injury.
That's the son of a urologist. That's serious. Don't mess with that. Yeah.
Honestly, I'm working hard on a fifth, but there's Justice, the other pitcher, the young guy. What's his name? Justice, last name, forget, can't remember. this is how
Sheffield.
Separated I am from the Mariners right now. It's very sad. Sheffield, that's it. Justice
man.
Sheffield. Yes, I he's promising.
Vogelbach still playing?
Yeah, we still got Vogelbach.
Vogelbach?
2019 All-Star Dan Vogelbach. Yeah.
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 There you go. So there we go. We could name 5 players for the Mariners now. Oh man, it's just, it's tough. It's tough days.
It is. And it does lead to the next logical question, which is, when did you feel your fandom start to fracture? Obviously, 01 is such a huge high, and then it's easy to sort of pay less and less attention with each passing year. But I mean, you guys mentioned like you were still going to spring training for a while, and then I'm assuming in the Cano era when they're actually pretty good, you're paying somewhat close attention.
Mm-hmm.
So
definitely.
Take me through, I guess, from the mid-2000s to now, how your fandom has evolved. I know it's a long stretch of time, but, like, from the really bad years of, like, the late aughts, early 2010s to, oh, we have Robinson Cano, that's interesting. Like, how does your...
Yeah.
'Cause I also am assuming that your work is taking off a little bit, so, like, you have other obligations as the Mariners are going through all these ups and downs. So how does your relationship with the team change over the last 10 years or so?
I mean, I really wanted Felix to put the pitch in the playoffs. That was the thing that was like keeping me interested for years, was going like, I just want Felix to I want him to stay, I want him to like it here, I want him to get a chance to pitch in the playoffs because he deserves it, and that kept me there. But I think having kids and having too many disappointing spring training experiences like made it a lot harder to watch as many games, and it became less essential to watch the games every single day.
I think that's the tricky thing about baseball, right? Which is it's relentless. You're playing every single day, and you're just reminded of the abject failure every single day. And it stops, it stops being fun at some point, and then if you don't have the, like Chris said, like the time commitment, you know, and you start missing a few, and then you miss a week, and then you're like, wait, oh, the trading deadline just went by. Oh, they traded that guy, you know. And it's funny because, you know, I make fun. I mean, the Willie Bloomquist thing made me so mad. But, you know, I then did become really susceptible to the weird, let's bring back the old player stunts. Like, you know, when Griffey came back or when Ichiro came back, and you're like, okay, well, at least now I have like an emotional connection, even though I know this is really like a terrible baseball move. But, you know, you could at least get a little bit of that, that connection back. Which I'm sure is why they did it. But it's, yeah, I think the kids thing was hard, and work obviously. And then, you know, you just, there's only a certain amount of statistical data you can retain in your head. And, you know, let's be honest, once Russell Wilson, you know, started winning those games the way that the Mariners were doing in the eighth inning, it's just, you know, your attention starts to wane a little bit. I hate to say it.
Yeah. Cano got kept me interested for a little bit, and then the last couple of years I've been really, really tailed off. I sort of check box scores and look at highlights if there's something interesting, but it's not the same as it used to be. For a long, long time, and I've been, you know, even in some pretty crappy years, where they were very bad, I was still like following it much more closely than I have in the last couple. Just been so frustrated with all the decision making that's been going on. It's really hard to. Yeah, but you know, as soon as there's really hope again, I'll be right back. As I'm a sucker.
I was just gonna say, you know, I think the other thing that I realize is like changed in, you know, in the last, call it 5 or 10 years, and maybe it had a little bit to do with the Mariners, but it also just has to do with like how we're watching television. Is, I mean, I used to watch SportsCenter every night, you know, and I don't think I've watched SportsCenter in I don't know how long. So that even, you know, you would just, you know, because you're on Netflix or you're doing, you know, whatever it is, and so it's just like you would at least have this connection. You know, and you would see the highlights, like you didn't have to seek it out. It would sort of find you. And so now you have to be really intentional about your fandom, unless if you're not following it, it's just really easy to get thrown off.
Well, I've got one other embarrassing fandom story, which is about, I think about 3 years ago, maybe.
It was five. It was almost five years ago. It was when my son was born.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. They asked me to throw out the first pitch on a July 4th weekend because they were going to show the Lego movie after the game. It was like a Sunday day, you know, family event, and they were showing the Lego movie, and my friend Phil and I had written and directed that movie, so they knew that I was a Mariners fan, so they asked me to come and throw out the first pitch. I was very excited, but I threw the worst first pitch. I was so nervous that it was going to bounce before I hit home plate that I just like really went for it, and then a ball hung on in my hand and then went way left, way, way left, and then the announcer said, "Well, I guess not everything is awesome." And I was like, oh no. You had that insult in your holster ready to go. But yeah, so it was what should have been a glorious memory turned into a very embarrassing one. My whole family was there. It was great.
It's all right. It's not like the video is easily accessible online, so don't look it up.
Please.
HDP.
do you remember who was your catcher for that? Who like got to receive your first pitch?
Okay, it was like backup shortstop. I think I still have, he signed me the ball. I have it in here somewhere. Backup shortstop from 5 years ago was
Spike Dolan. No.
It was.
Is that Chris Taylor territory? No. Who actually is good now?
I don't know how I would. I can't honestly can't
Maybe
remember.
Like Luis Sardinius?
Ricky something.
Oh, Ricky Weeks.
Ricky Weeks. Yeah, it was Ricky Weeks.
Oh wow. Yeah. Okay.
Ricky Weeks was catching for me. Yes, Ricky Weeks was catching for me, and he was like, "It's all right, man." As he like ran after the ball, and I was like, "Oh, it's all right, man."
Yeah. Well, I'm always fascinated by that because I want to know like how that decision is made. Like, it seems like they don't make someone who's about to play in the game catch the first pitch. So you usually get a backup or a starting pitcher who's not pitching. And I'm always curious, like, if they want to do it or if it's like a punishment, you know, like a kangaroo court situation where it's like,
yeah, like you got to go out there and catch this sucker's ball. I'm sure that no one was clamoring to.
Or conversely, I mean, I know my friend Isabel, who used to work for Lookout Landing and now works for the Hall of Fame. She told a story once of being in the clubhouse on a day where Chrissy Teigen was throwing the first pitch, and it was the opposite, where all the players were like, I want to catch.
Yes.
And I think they eventually had Cano do it because he's just the most famous guy, and they had famous guests. Yeah.
So there's some differences between Chrissy Teigen and me, I would say.
They're both, I don't want to make news here, but they're both involved in the movie Connected.
Connected, coming out September, hopefully, if there are movies. She is a voice in that movie, it's true.
Oh.
And is a delightful person.
Great. Well, I guess then my last question for y'all is, what are your thoughts right now about the Mariners and about baseball? Are you optimistic that we'll have a season? Like, have you guys been reading into these plans that MLB is coming up with? Or
those are
where
crazy.
Are you at with? Yeah, it's all very hypothetical.
I just want to know where the tryouts for regular people are going to be after the entire MLB contracts coronavirus, after they quarantine them all together. You'll finally get to actually live out Little Big League. How's that?
That's right. Except for everyone will be 14. It seems like it would be hard to do anything before it could be relatively safe to have large groups of people together. That's my hot take, hot sports take.
It is weird, though. I mean, baseball is, I guess, except for like plays at the plate or, you know, if you're trying to steal, like
one of the most isolated games.
Everyone is kind of
six feet
away from each other, you know, it's sort of.
That is true.
Yeah. It's the closest you could get, but I don't know. It seems, listen, I love baseball. I want baseball to be played, you know, as soon as possible, but you got to keep people safe. And I don't know. I just worry that they're doing it for the wrong reason, and then that's going to lead to bad outcomes. But by the way, what they should do is just broadcast the 2001 games all over again, minus the playoffs.
Yeah. As long as we have something to show the people, they're not going to know the difference, right? People are stupid. Sports fans
aren't,
you know, generally the brightest bulbs on the tree.
the video game versions of MLB are pretty, you know, realistic now. They could probably just do that, and people wouldn't really know.
That's also a great point. Yeah, might as well. All right. Well, Chris, Aditya, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about baseball in a time where we have no idea when baseball is coming back, and explaining your Mariner fandom. Now is the portion of the show where you get to talk about yourself. So plug whatever it is you have coming up. I know that your industry is in kind of a weird spot, but if you want to direct people to your social medias or whatever it is, now is the time to do that. Fire away.
We already talked about Connected, which is a super funny movie that we're producing, and is written and directed by this guy Mike Rianda, who is from Gravity Falls. It's a very funny movie, and it's very relevant to what's going on nowadays. We also have a show on Fox called Bless the Hearts that's coming back this fall. Also, still crazily in production because people can draw things from their houses. And a whole bunch of other stuff that I can't quite talk about just yet. But there's a bunch of very exciting stuff on the near horizon. Am I missing anything, Aditya?
I think that's it. Yeah, we're in that weird you know, Black Ops CIA moment where we could tell you, but then we'd have to go and personally murder everybody who listens to your thing, and that's bad for your viewership and listenership. So we won't do that.
Yeah, you're the general managers who are working on a bunch of trades, but you can't talk about it until it's finalized.
Exactly. Some very exciting DePoto stuff happening.
Yeah.
Both of them are trying to acquire Mookie Betts right now.
Yes. And
we're getting Juan Gonzalez, guys. We're finally going to fix that left field problem for the Mariners that's been troubling us.
Yeah. Well, it's been a lot of fun talking to you, Matthew, and hopefully we'll talk again sometime.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, as long as we have this weird sort of period of time where there's no actual games to talk about, we need to fill our schedule. So you guys were wonderful guests, and we will remember you in the future. My name is Matthew Robertson. The listeners probably knew that already, but you can follow me on Twitter at mroberson22. Continue reading Lookout Landing and following us on all platforms. And if you like this podcast, go ahead and press subscribe. It helps us create more of them in the future. To my guests, thank you so much. And until next time, bye.